First, if you have a dysfunctional family, you are not alone. Our families of origin can shape who we become and how we relate to others and move through the world. So when our families are dysfunctional, it can feel impossible to change, and that things like conflict, codependency, and pain are just the norm. Our next guest is a therapist and boundary-setting expert with advice for people dealing with dysfunctional family relationships. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you and family relationships in your life? How have you changed and healed? Did you find ways to improve those relationships, or did you make the choice to dial back or even end those relationships? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Nedra Glover-Tawab is a licensed therapist and a New York Times bestselling author. Her latest book is called Drama Free, A Guide to Managing Unhealthy Family Relationships. Nedra, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
You write, Nedra, that sometimes you hear from people, patients and others, that, you know what, family relationship is not such a big deal. That didn't shape who I am. You don't buy that. Can you talk about the importance of our families of origin in shaping who we are as people?
Yes, that's how we become ourselves. We learn so much by those early relationships and what we observe and also what we experience in those relationships. So it is very unlikely that we are existing in the world with no impact from our family.
Something I hadn't really thought of until I read your book is that if someone grows up in a dysfunctional family, that's all they've ever known. That may be all they see. They may not know it's dysfunctional in the first place. How do we, I guess, start to self-diagnose, like, hey, these things in my life are kind of dysfunctional?
You know, one way that I see us starting to diagnose this early is exposure. And that could be with TV, seeing different families on TV and how they interact. Sometimes your friends' families, maybe other healthier relationships within your family. Also, you know, as we get out into the world, you just see the world in a different light and you're able to say, whoa, something in my home is not normal or something with, you know, this family member is a bit off. So we have an opportunity to see other relationships and how people are able to show up in a much healthier way.
We're going to get into some specific kinds of dysfunction, what we can do about them. But there's some general pieces of advice that I think apply to a lot of people. Now, if we realize there's dysfunction, we have a few different choices. The easiest choice, and if I'm reading right, the wrongest choice is to say, well, whatever, that's life. We're just going to live with it. Can you talk about the importance of not just, you know, staying the course and living with this painful situation?
Yeah, living with it keeps you in the cycle of what's happening. And many of us want some sort of relief. We want some sort of resolution to the problem. And the way that we get that is by confronting some of these situations with people when it's possible. Now, there are some relationships where you've tried, you've placed a boundary, and the other person won't respect it. And then your choice may be to end the relationship. But there are many cases in which we're not talking enough. We're not having enough conversations around the problems in the family.
The toughest decision, I think, is to say, you know, this is a person who's been a huge part of my life, a sibling, a parent, you name it, and saying, but it's time to be done. What is the bar? How do we start to evaluate if it is time to say, you know what, it isn't worth the work anymore?
I think about the impact that the relationship is having on your life. Are you more anxious or more depressed, or do you feel unsafe in the relationship? Also, is there any effort from the other person to improve the relationship? Are they constantly, you know, doing certain things, or is it impossible for you to even view this situation from a different perspective? Because maybe it's, you know, the person is trying to do something different and we can't accept it because of what's been done. So it may be time to consider, you know, the relationship and the value it has in your life when you start to see that I can't exist in this anymore. It is more unhealthy for me to be in this than it is for me to leave the relationship.
Now, in a lot of ways, we're going to focus on the people who are at the receiving end of dysfunction, I think. Is there a way for people to look at themselves and figure out, am I the problem? Am I the dysfunctional one? Am I causing the people in my life pain? How do we self-diagnose and try to start moving out of that?
Yeah, I wonder, you know, if we were to look at how people respond to us, how people maybe commonly have issues with us. Usually when we are the person causing the problem, we've heard it from other people. We're just not listening. We have seen in our relationships that people are distant from us, or maybe they're estranged from us. And there is growth in just wondering why. Why don't people want to talk to you? Why might it be that this person is upset with you? And in that wondering, can you improve something? Can you repair something? Is there something salvageable in the relationship? You have to be open to seeing your role in the dysfunction.
We're talking to therapist Nedra Glover-Tawab about family dysfunction and how to deal with dysfunctional family relationships. Her newest book is called Drama Free, A Guide to Managing Unhealthy Family Relationships. You can join in with your thoughts, maybe your experiences, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Okay, Nedra, I've been talking in very vague terms here. You give a lot of specific cases and examples in your book. One situation might be, okay, an adult is looking at their parent who's had a history of alcoholism, and that's caused a lot of this dysfunction and pain. If the adult in that situation wants to bring that, broach that with their parents, how do they start?
Just notice the problem. You know, your issue with alcohol has impacted me in the following ways, or even just placing boundaries. You know, when you come over my house, I want you to be sober. When you engage with my kids, I want you to be sober. I will not be coming to this thing because there will be some substance abuse there, and I don't want to observe it or be a part of it. So sometimes we try to control the other person's behavior. Often we'll say to the person, you need to stop drinking, right? And that's a choice that that person has to make. But what we can do in our lives is figure out, you know, if they are drinking, these are the things I will do. I will let them know that I have an issue with this, but it's not necessarily the case that I can change their behavior.
I can see the person being confronted, being defensive. Do you have some strategies for whether we're confronting someone over alcohol or whatever it might be to, I don't know, hopefully not provoke that defensive response that's going to shut down the conversation right after it starts?
Yeah, you know, sometimes when people are not ready to receive information, they will be defensive no matter how we approach the conversation because they don't want to change. They don't want to hear the information. And so just hearing it overall, you know, especially with substance misuse, most people are like, no, I'm fine. I could quit whenever I want to. This is not a problem for me, even if it's a problem for you, because you're asking them to stop something that's not a choice at this point. It's an addiction, which means that they're unable to stop. So expecting the person to say, you know, maybe, oh, you're right. I've been abusing alcohol. Let me stop this today. That is idealistic. And maybe we should anticipate a bit of defensiveness, a bit of resistance, because that is likely what will happen. So when a person is defensive, we can stick to what we're saying. We don't have to, become oppositional or get into an argument with them. What we're seeing, it exists. It doesn't mean that this other person with the issue needs to validate the thing that is very clearly happening and often spoken about with multiple family members.
We're talking to therapist Nedra Glover-Tawab about her new book, Drama Free, A Guide to Managing Unhealthy Family Relationships. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for our guest about dysfunction in families, how to manage that? Do you have an example that you'd be willing to share? If you're not willing, very understandable. But if you're willing to share a story from your own life where maybe you had one of these tough conversations with a family member, well, we'd sure appreciate it if you're willing to share that with us. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with therapist Nedra Glover Tawab about her new book. It's called Drama Free, A Guide to Managing Unhealthy Family Relationships. If you have a story you'd like to share, an experience, a question maybe for our guest, you could join in at 800-642-1234. If you found a positive way to deal with a dysfunctional, a tough family relationship, definitely love to hear about that. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Now, Nedra, people aren't calling in, and I'm not really surprised because you even talk about this a little bit in the book. We're, in a lot of ways, trained not to talk about our unhealthy relationships, and that's maybe part of the problem. Can you talk about talking about these things?
Yeah, there's a lot of shame and also embarrassment. Sometimes we don't even know that other people are dealing with these issues because we aren't talking about it. It's not anything that comes up at a party, or it's not conversations that we typically have because we want to present as put together or as functional. It can be quite embarrassing. I've talked to many people who said, you know, I didn't want to have kids over to my house because of, you know, my dad's mood or, you know, my mom's wild behaviors. And I think sometimes that's not something we feel comfortable sharing. You know, we hear about that on podcasts, or we may hear about it on the radio or from brave individuals who share their story, but there is still a lot of silence around what happened in many of our families.
And in your book, you write that some of the signs of dysfunction sometimes are covering up problems that are there, denying that a problem exists, finding workarounds, as you said, so people don't see that dysfunction in action. And these, in a lot of ways, you say, are warning signs that we are, in fact, in a dysfunctional family.
Yeah. I mean, I think of, you know, like almost like we have like a Weekend at Bernie's sort of situation mm-hmm. with the dysfunction in our family. We just carry it around and put clothes on it, and we try to figure out all of these sort of things to mask the problem. Sometimes that includes enmeshing with people and being codependent and supporting some of their behaviors so it won't reflect so badly on us. We don't want everyone to know that, oh my gosh, this is the part of the system that I'm from. We want to appear as if we have it together. We have, you know, many ideas around how to work through things, when in actuality, many people struggle with their family relationships.
Another concern that you think about a lot, I know both in this book and in your previous work, is boundaries and boundary violations in our relationships. What do we mean by that?
Boundaries are expectations and needs that we have in relationships, and those violations can be any type of relationship. You know, I hear a lot about mother-in-laws and, you know, how they won't allow their children or, you know, their daughter-in-laws or son-in-laws to parent in a particular way. That is a boundary violation. You know, I think sometimes in sibling relationships, when you've always had a certain role in the family, you try to shift that maybe from being the, you know, the person everybody thought of as like funny and not taking anything seriously to being a full-fledged adult who's very aware of their life and who shows up differently. You know, that can be a really difficult conflict. So sometimes the conflict in families, it's not these big dysfunctional things like substance abuse and, you know, maybe physical abuse or sexual abuse and neglect. It could be, you know, I have some sibling rivalry with, you know, with my sister, or I have issues with how my partner parents his children. It could also be my in-laws are always in our stuff. There are so many ways that our dysfunction shows up.
I want to talk about concrete ways to set boundaries. And you give a really interesting example in the book, twin sisters, very close to each other, very much associated with each other. One of them's getting married, the other one unhappy with the decline in contact as the sister, the twin sister, you know, enters a new phase of life. And you give some examples from that for how to set up those boundaries in a polite but firm way. How did that work out?
Yeah, often with siblings, there is this level of enmeshment because they are so similar. Everyone sees them as the same person, and they see themselves as, you know, sort of the same person. And so that sort of breaking away and going in different directions, be it, you know, one person wanting to move to a new city or attend a different college or even get married, those can be critical times in an enmeshed relationship. And, you know, one person may have a big issue with that distinction between you and me. You're making this big choice, you're spending this time with this other person, and it is a difficult adjustment. And what makes it easier is when there are conversations around you wanting to build your own life separate from your identity of this twin sibling. I want to have a relationship with my husband. I want to raise my own children. I want to be in a different dynamic. And these are the ways in which I can make time for us. I still love you deeply, and I want to have other relationships that are important to me.
Talking to Nedra Glover-Tawab, licensed therapist and author of the new book, Drama Free, A Guide to Managing Unhealthy Family Relationships. Related to that, I think in some ways, a common scenario in healing from dysfunctional family relationships is that, you know, you change, one person might change, but the rest of the family doesn't, which could be kind of a lonely experience. What do people do if they've done the work to change, but then they go back to visit family and things are still all the same there?
Yeah, you have to really pick your energy. And I think sometimes that might mean, you know, staying in a hotel and staying instead of staying in the house with people. It might mean shorter visits. It could mean maybe not visiting at all. You know, there are some people who can tolerate it for a certain length of time, and there are others who say, I just can't go back there because of what the situation is. So you choose, you know, what works for you, and you notice your energy in those situations. It's very hard to give a prescriptive sort of way of existing in a situation where you are the only person who has noticed and is responding to the problem. In dysfunctional families, they remain dysfunctional because no one is willing to change anything. That is the dysfunction, being unchanged. So when someone has an issue and everybody wants to stay the same, it can be very sad to watch people stay in circumstances that are not serving them well.
I want to spend some time on a specific group of people who are becoming parents, who those parents grew up in dysfunctional families themselves. And I've heard this from friends over the years. My parents did blank, and I want to make sure I don't do blank as a parent myself. How do people check themselves and try not to replicate that thing that they grew up with, the model of parenting that they literally experienced growing up?
It takes a lot of intentional practice and patience, because as you are learning to parent, you are also revisiting spaces of your childhood. You know, as you're pregnant, that may bring up things for you. As your child, you know, has these various moments in life, it's like, oh my gosh, I didn't receive this. So I think there is a lot of healing and parenting growth that's happening simultaneously that you will have to make space for. And sometimes that is best done with, you know, a therapist, your partner. It can look many different ways, but it is quite the experience to raise children in a healthy environment when your environment was not healthy and you're having to teach yourself a lot of tools that you never knew.
You give some practical advice for parents there on raising kids who are, you know, emotionally healthy and primed to have functional relationships. You know, as a parent myself, in the moment, you're not always thinking things through super carefully, but what are some things to watch out for, some things that are going to shut down those positive emotional responses?
Adults telling kids how to show up in the world and exist. You know, many adults, including myself sometimes, you know, we make mistakes in how we talk to or treat kids. Kids are, you know, little people with big feelings. And sometimes because of our reflection point as adults, we forget that they're children and they do have a perspective. So if we want them to be assertive beings, they have to be assertive with the adults in their lives. They have to be able to share their story with you. They have to be able to have a level of openness. They have to be able to explore how boundaries can and can't work for them. So there are so many things emotionally that they need that adults have the perspective to potentially help them with when we're open to raising emotionally aware and adjusted children.
In just our last minute or so, Nedra, when do we decide, you know what, this is a little more than I can deal with. I need to seek out a therapist or other form of outside help to help me through this situation?
When we've been trying to do it on our own and we're not getting any further, it is time to now seek a therapist. Often we will keep trying over and over. I keep doing this thing and it's not working. And that's a sign that perhaps you don't have the tools. Maybe you don't know exactly on what needs to be done. Maybe you need someone to hold space for you to hear about, you know, how you're doing this. Therapy can be a support. It's not just for people in crisis. It's also for people who need support and maybe someone to listen to them as they're processing a lot of this new stuff.
Nedra, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
You're welcome.
That was therapist and author Nedra Glover-Tawab. She talked to us about her new book. It's called Drama Free, A Guide to Managing Unhealthy Family Relationships. Now we travel with our taste buds to Poland. It's this week's edition of Food Friday, and we're going to talk to the owner of Door County's only Polish restaurant. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about Polish cuisine? Do you have Polish heritage, enthusiasm for Polish food? Did you grow up eating pierogi and other Polish foods? Do you make it yourself? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Krzysztof Kroll is founder, owner, and head chef of Prince of Pierogi Restaurant in Ephraim. Krzysztof, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Now, you're originally from Poland. I understand you're back visiting Poland right now. What brought you to Wisconsin?
Oh, that's a good question. Yes, I'm currently in Poland. Came back for a three-week visit. What brought me to Wisconsin was a foreign exchange program from a university back home called Work and Travel. Door County hosts about 200 J-1 visa exchange students each summer, and I was one of them. And my first summer was in 2012.
What made you decide to end up staying in Door County and opening up a restaurant there?
Oh, believe me or not, but the first experience in America in Door County just made me realize that this is my second home now, and that I want to continue my adventure here in America. A lot of cultural differences that I was met with when I first came. Notice how friendly and open-minded people are, how friendly Midwesterns are. I had an opportunity to go to a cultural exchange program to South Korea or Belgium later on, but that would have meant I couldn't have gone back to Door County for the summer. And I never wanted to miss out on it again. And since that first summer, I spent 11 consecutive summers in the U.S., having moved to Door County permanently in 2015.
You grew up.
And then, and then the story continues with me starting the restaurant. I just basically wanted to contribute to the community. And I dug in on the things that I could do best. And I have worked for numerous years in the restaurant industry. I have a passion for cooking and for entrepreneurship. And I've decided to fill in a gap in the market of a Polish cuisine in Wisconsin, since I've always believed we were underrepresented as a nation, despite the huge heritage, and decided to purchase an old building and turn it into a Polish restaurant.
Now, of course, you grew up with Polish food in Poland. Can you talk about how you learned about these foods from your mom, I understand, and your grandma?
Exactly. So first of all, the culture of eating out in Poland is not big at all. Me and my family of four, we possibly went out to eat once in my entire life growing up in Poland with my mom, my dad, and my sister. The reason for it is restaurants don't have the greatest reputation back home since most of moms are housewives and they cook all of the homemade meals at home. And I've been around it all my life since my mom gave up her career. She has a master's degree in economics and she dedicated herself to taking care of me and my sister and the house, which included making fresh home cooked meals every day. So, in order to spend more time with my mom, I would gladly join her in the kitchen so we can talk about school, life, wait till dad comes back from work, and then enjoy dinner together.
We're talking to Christoph Kroll. It's Food Friday. Christoph is head chef at Prince of Pierogi Restaurant in Ephraim in Door County. He's sharing Polish cuisine with us, some ingredients, some recipes coming up, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you have a favorite Polish food, if you grew up with it, if you have questions about making it, call 800-642-1234. Okay, Christoph, if I say Polish food to people, a lot of them, probably me too, will think pierogi. I grew up eating them. My Polish grandma cooked them all the time. What is the secret to making a great pierogi? Or pierog is singular, to make a great pierogi plural.
So the secret is, I'm going to have to say, you're not going to be great at it from the get-go. It takes a little bit of time and experience. It's a time-consuming process. Since you make the dough from scratch, you make the filling from scratch, and then you have to wrap it correctly, pinch it so it doesn't open up in a boiling water or a pan fry. So give yourself some credit for taking on this task. My secret would be the advice to people: divide the prep process into stages. Don't try to make the entire meal in 2 hours. It's going to be extremely difficult, and it's not really worth the time to make just one pierog or 10 pierogi. You need to make a few. And it's a very fun bonding activity that you could do with family members, friends, which is very common in Wisconsin, from what I've been hearing from my patrons, is that they often gather together for Christmas Eve time or Easter just to make pierogies for the holiday season. And you just make a lot of them. So first, I would concentrate on the dough. Remember that flour makes things dry and water wet. So you just need a perfect combination of boiling water, salt, flour, preferably unbleached flour, and then a little bit of vegetable oil. And I practice this recipe just because it's vegan and I offer some vegan pierogies at my restaurant. So once you prepare the dough, then you have to create dough circles. You can use a glass to create dough circles that you'll wrap your filling into. And I recommend using parchment paper with flour so the dough circles do not stick to each other, so they can be used later on the next day. They could be up in the fridge up to 7 days. In the meantime, you'll make the filling fresh and then you'll hand wrap them. You can use pinchers from Amazon or eBay. I highly recommend those. You just need to focus on the double pinch when you're closing the pierogi, just so they don't open up in the water, because then you'll just get the dough and the filling will disintegrate.
This is, tried to make pierogies myself exactly once, and that's what I ended up with, floating dough and filling at the top of the pot. It was not a thing anybody was going to eat. Let's talk about fillings now. Now, I grew up with the sauerkraut, like the cheese, the kind of cream cheese deal, like cheese, and then potato. Now, you have experimented with some other stuff for your Door County restaurant. What other things have you played with for your fillings?
Oh, so many things. This is one of my favorite things to do and talk about, is practice different pierogi recipes. There's so much different cuisine available here in the US that I could learn from. And I went on some classic Wisconsin fillings, such as bacon, mac and cheese, comfort food inside of Polish comfort food, pierogi. Kids love that special. I make Door County cherry and cream cheese pierogies also for the local people in Door County. Potato cheddar jalapeno would be a little bit of a Hispanic fusion. Sauerkraut mushroom and kielbasa, the classic sauerkraut mushroom pierogi that you mentioned, mixed with our traditional Polish sausage. Some dessert pierogies covered with powdered sugar, chocolate or caramel drizzle, and whipped cream. The fillings would be banana and Nutella, a little chocolate banana pierogi, or wild blueberry. Even seasonal pierogies in the fall, like pumpkin spice, feature our menu. Spinach and feta is very light and fresh. Potato onion, another vegan pierogi. And also the classic cheese and potato, farmer's cheese, potato, and caramelized onion, or slow roasted pork. We've made them with beef and cheese before, but I've learned that the beef is a little bit too dry for a dumpling that you boil in water, if that makes sense.
I got to ask, Krzysztof, you're back in Poland. You tell people, I'm making pumpkin spice pierogi and bacon mac and cheeseburger. Are they like, that sounds great, Krzysztof, make it for us? Or are they like, what the heck are you doing to our pierogi?
That's a great question. Bacon mac and cheese. Mac and cheese is not a thing in Poland, really. I never grew up with it. I never grew up with ranch dressing or classic items on American tables. So I've never made those contemporary pierogies at home for, friends and family. They would be open to try it, although it's just like with your favorite foods, let's say a cheeseburger. It's good the way it is. You don't necessarily have to add too many things as a connoisseur. So I think for me, my personal favorite pierogi is cheese and potato. And every time I'm somewhere outside of Poland that has a Polish restaurant, I'm definitely going to try that flavor first, because this is our staple.
It's Food Friday. We're talking about Polish cooking with Krzysztof Kroll from the Prince of Pierogi restaurant in Ephraim in Door County. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have our guest about making Polish food at home? And I know we got some Polish heritage here in Wisconsin. Anybody have a story to share about foods you ate growing up, foods you make now, or maybe like me, have tried and failed to make over the years? Love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Krzysztof Kroll, founder, owner, and head chef at Prince of Pierogi Restaurant in Ephraim in Door County. It's Food Friday, and he's telling us about Polish cooking. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a question about the foods, the ingredients, the recipes in Polish cuisine, maybe your own experiences, maybe growing up with it or encountering it in your travels, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org. Let's turn now, Krzysztof, to cabbage rolls, gwumkis, we called them. I don't know if we pronounced it right, the Polish growing up. Can you tell us about these Polish cabbage rolls?
Yes, you nailed it. It's pronounced gwumkis. They're at our restaurant, we have a nickname for them. We call them Polish burritos. It's basically a cabbage leaf peeled and wrapped around ground beef or pork, rice, tomato sauce, sautéed onions, sometimes mushrooms, parsley, salt, and pepper. Then you bake them for about an hour and a half. They come topped with a marinara sauce, but they don't have to, sour cream, and a little bit of dill on top. It's one of my favorite comfort foods. You could eat it with a knife and fork, or you don't. You can just use your hands. It's very popular in Poland. I would say it's our second most popular dish besides pierogies. It's really good and hearty on a cold day, but it also doesn't hurt to have one in the summer.
Let's bring on our callers now at 800-642-1234. Evelyn is with us in Green Bay. Evelyn, hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm enjoying the program. I'm familiar with his place as we go off into our county quite often. But in the pierogito, do you put any egg in there?
So you say eggs in the
I
dough,
do
Evelyn? No, okay.
Yeah.
But you could. I have a recipe called Perfect. I have a book called Perfect Pierogi Dough Recipes, and there are a few recipes in there that include an egg-based dough. If you ever stop in at the restaurant, feel free to send me a message. I could pick up the book and share some of these recipes with you.
Thanks a lot, Evelyn, for calling in. Peter is with us now in Burlington. Peter, hi.
Hello. Just wanted to comment on the pierogi because I grew up in a Polish household where Christmas is not Christmas without pierogi. And I'm the youngest of eight, so we would make quite a few pierogi, as you can imagine. But we always made them with, we still make them with sauerkraut and onion mm-hmm. mixture. And just to Evelyn's comment about the egg, I found that if I just rub a little egg on the edge, I don't have them break open when I boil them too. So.
And Peter, are you did you eat them on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve? Because we did Christmas Eve with the pierogi.
Yeah, absolutely. Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve was our Christmas feast and celebration, and the pierogi making process would begin Christmas Eve. And hopefully there would be some leftovers for Christmas Day.
Peter, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, and Christoph, our thing was we'd eat the, you know, we'd have the Christmas Eve meal earlier in the day, and we'd all hang out for some hours. And at some point, somebody sneaks back into the fridge and breaks out the leftovers and is round two on the pierogi. Can you talk about holiday traditions around some of these foods, Christoph?
Oh, yes, definitely. It's just the same in Poland. It's very, very big for Christmas. There's no Christmas without pierogi. One of the staples for a Polish Christmas is borscht, which is a beet soup that you eat with little dumplings. Every Polish dinner table for Christmas Eve has to have at least a variety of 13 different dishes. That's the tradition. You always have to have an extra setup for just in case a stranger or a traveler shows up at your door. So you're obligated to host him to your family's Christmas dinner. The most popular pierogi for Christmas is sauerkraut and mushroom pierogi. And it's a family gathering. It's probably the biggest. Poland is a Catholic country, 99% Catholic country. So it's a very big event in every Polish family.
Peter, thanks a lot for sharing your experience at 800-642-1234. Talk to Christoph Kroll with the Prince of Pierogi Restaurant in Ephraim in Door County on this edition of Food Friday. Back to your calls now with Laura in Cudahy. Laura, hello.
Hi. In 2014, my husband and I had included Poland as part of our travels that summer, and we ate a lot of pierogi while we were there. And a couple weeks after we got back from vacation, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel had an article about a family and their pierogi making, and they had a recipe for pierogi. And so I tried it. And as I make it more and more often, I get better and better at it. And it's probably now my favorite meal wow. to make. My husband and I actually have enjoyed pierogi twice this week.
Awesome. Laura, what is the favorite filling in your household?
Well, we have two. Our very favorite is spinach, garlic, a little bit of asadio cheese, and sour cream. And then I also like to make one with potato, leek, carrot, and cabbage, and a little bit of cheese.
Wow. Laura, thanks for sharing that. Christoph, Laura is experimenting kind of the same way you are at your restaurant.
Sounds delicious. And it really warms my heart to hear people trying to apply different ingredients into pierogies. Owning Prince of Pierogi Restaurant made me realize how important this food is, how important the heritage is to American people. And it's really great to hear all different ideas because I learned from people too. So many recipes that people shared with me I would say it's been at least a 50 different pierogi recipes so far, just only inspired me to create different specials and try them out for myself.
Thanks a lot for that call, Laura. And I want to turn to another dish that I got to say I didn't grow up with, the Hunter's Stew. I like stew. What goes into a Polish Hunter's Stew?
Mm-hmm. So Polish Hunter's Stew, it's called bigos. It has its own name, bigos. It's a mix of fermented cabbage, sauerkraut, and fresh cabbage, tomatoes, mushrooms, onions, and a variety of meats. That's what makes it a Hunter's Stew. So whether it's venison, ground beef, kielbasa is a must. You could put pork, and it's a tomato-based stew that you cook with beef broth, with a variety of spices such as parsley, smoked paprika, salt, pepper, basil, rosemary, bay leaf. You slow cook the Hunter's Stew for hours. It's served with warm bread. It makes a great meal. It's a hearty meal. It's very traditional to Polish cuisine. In any list of the top most popular Polish foods, you will frequently see the Hunter's Stew being featured in top five among pierogies and gołąbki's.
Time for one more caller. Tom is with us calling from on the road. Tom, hi.
Hey, I grew up in a Polish family in Chicago. I played at the Shanties festivals in Krakow and Warsaw, and I live in Madison, which has the most incredible food, I think, in America. But why are there no Polish restaurants in Madison? We need you.
Tom, thanks for the call. Christoph, I don't know if we can lure you out of Door County at all, but you saw that's part of why you're opening your restaurant. You saw a very low Polish restaurant per capita ratio here in Wisconsin.
Exactly. That's what really motivated me to represent my culture, represent my home country, and, be in my favorite place in the world, which is Door County, Wisconsin. I would be easily persuaded to venture out to different cities in the U.S. And I'm not going to say I have some dreams for the future to expand the restaurant and carry on this brand to other cities. However, for now, I'm just focusing on my little restaurant in Ephraim in Door County, since it's going to be my year four. So I'm still focusing on the reviews online, on creating the best possible experience for each guest, on mastering all of the ingredients that go into a perfect customer experience. And only when I'm super comfortable with letting my little restaurant be run by my staff, only then I will be courageous enough to try open another restaurant in another city in Wisconsin.
Excellent. Thanks for that call. And Christoph, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
That's Christoph Kroll, owner of Prince of Pierogi Restaurant in Ephraim in Door County. We talked to him today about Polish cooking for this week's edition of Food Friday. You can keep sharing your Polish food favorites and experiences on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And hey, for more food-related conversations, check out the morning show this month every Tuesday at 8, talking about cooking tools. The first one, if you check out the archives, knives, and cutting boards. Next up, it's copper cookware and induction stovetops. That's Tuesday mornings at 8.